Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey, and this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case I have for you today is without a doubt one of the most disturbing and unbelievable stories we've ever covered here on Mountain State Mysteries. It begins in what should have been the safest place in the world, home. A mother and daughter suddenly find themselves trapped inside their own house, held captive by a man who broke in. And what followed was a terrifying ordeal that would end with the daughter managing to escape and run for help. But when help finally arrived, she would learn the horrifying truth. Her mother was dead, and the man responsible was gone. Years have passed since that terrifying night. Questions remain. Answers have been hard to come by, and the person responsible has never been brought to justice. Today, we're going back to where it all began, to a home that became the scene of a nightmare, and a case that remains unsolved. This is the case of Kathy Carroll. It was a cold and rainy spring day in the mountains that 34-year-old Kathy Carroll died. There was nothing on the day of April 22, 1986, which marked it as one of tragedy for Kathy, her daughter Pamela, and everyone who knew them. But it proved to be a day that Kathy would not survive and Pamela would never forget. On that spring day in 1986, Kathy Carroll and her daughter Pamela were only ordinary people living comfortable and pleasant lives. Kathy was a 1970 graduate of Oak Hill High School, a short distance from the town of Montgomery where she would later live. She would end up working as a secretary to the then mayor of Montgomery, Chuck Smith. She proved to be a welcome and capable addition to the city office. Within 6 years, she had risen to a position as finance director for the city and placed in charge of the $1 million annual city budget. Co-workers and employers described her as extremely capable and pleasant to work with. She seemed to manage her responsibilities with little need of supervision, and her warm personality made her very effective in dealing with the public. Senior citizens found her especially responsive and understanding of their problems. She carried her contact with senior citizens outside of the office when she became active in senior citizens' activities. Kathy and her daughter from a previous marriage, Pamela Drennan, made their home in the small community known as Montgomery Heights, about 4 miles from the town of Montgomery. It's a small housing development of about 50 residents, which overlooks the Kanawha River. Although her professional life was going well, she was going through a difficult period in her personal life. She and her husband had been separated for over 2 years. And in early 1986, she decided to take the final step and file for divorce. The final divorce hearing was scheduled for April 23, 1986. In retrospect, her friends and co-workers remembered she seemed unusually nervous for several months before her murder. It was reported that she didn't walk out to her car alone after work, even in the daylight. Most people who knew her attributed her nervousness to her upcoming divorce from her husband, Gene Carroll. If she had some premonition of an upcoming disaster, she apparently had no way of knowing that danger would strike where she felt the most secure, in her own home. Even on the day of her death, there was no warning of the horror that awaited Kathy inside her own home. On that day, she reported for work as usual. Her 15-year-old daughter Pamela returned home from school around 3 p.m., and she either watched television or studied until her mother got home from work 2 hours later. probably one of the reasons Kathy did not worry about leaving her daughter home alone for those 2 hours was the family dog, Thunder. It was a large Husky and German Shepherd mix, and as someone who grew up around one, they will be the biggest baby until they need to protect. One thing that is known about their dog is that it was known to refuse to allow anyone other than the family inside the fence which surrounded their yard. Thunder was so aggressive and easily excited that the neighbors would ask the Carrolls to tie the dog up before they cut their own grass next door. Kathy's parents could enter the yard, but only if they stood before Kathy or her strange husband. No one ever visited their home without calling first and asking them to restrain Thunder. The presence of Thunder has been one of the most baffling aspects of this case. For when Pamela returned home from school around 3 p.m. on April 22nd, she noticed nothing strange in the dog's behavior. He greeted her as always and followed her to the door of their home. Once inside, she went to her room, intending to work on her homework until her mother returned home. When Pamela entered her room, she was startled when she saw the outline of a man in the shadows of her closet. The heavy curtains on the bedroom window were drawn and the room was dark, so she could not make out anything more than an outline of a man. She was surprised that someone had managed to get past Thunder and into the house, but not at first alarmed. She felt so secure in the safety of her home that at first she assumed it was a relative playing a prank. But when the figure stepped closer, she saw that it was a masked man and that he was holding a gun pointed at her. Before she could react, the man turned around and struck her in the middle of the back, knocking her forward onto her bed.
Hey everybody, I'm Gucci.
And I am Rocky.
And we are
Two Guys No Cap. We are a podcast where we just sit down to talk about things that are going on in our life and that we love. You know, we talk about supernatural like ghosts and
Paints.
Monsters.
Boogerman.
And Bigfoot. We talk
Harry
about Bigfoot.
Man.
Yep. We also talk about some nerdy stuff like movies and
picture shows.
We definitely talk about video games.
Nintendo's. Be sure to check us out on all major podcast platforms and YouTube. And it is Two Guys, the numerical value two, not T-W-O or T-O-O. Guys, no cap. And I just want to remind you all, every pot has a lid, and that lid is being closed on this promotion. Thank you, guys, and be sure to check us out. We release new episodes every Wednesday at 8 a.m.
Have a good night.
Peace.
He immediately used heavy tape to bind her hands behind her back and her ankles together. From behind, he placed the tape securely over her eyes to prevent him from seeing him. As soon as he had her immobilized, face down on the bed, the man began to pace the room and questioned her. At first, he asked her for money. When she replied that she had nothing but a little change, he asked her what time her parents were expected home. She was paralyzed with fear at the thought of being assaulted by a burglar in her own home. She decided her safest course was simply to do whatever he said and wait for him to take what he wanted and leave. She told him that her father did not live there, but her mother would be coming home around 5 o'clock. In the back of her mind, she hoped that he was planning to make his escape before anyone else arrived in the house to discover him. He then asked her about whether anyone else was expected to come to the house that day. He warned her not to lie and told her that if anyone else showed up, he would kill them. After she assured him that she was expecting no one, the man shoved a sock in her mouth to keep her quiet and sealed it in place with tape. He then told her to move to the twin bed on the other side of the room and lay down. As she laid her back on the bed, he pulled the covers over and warned her to remain quiet when her mother came home. Then the masked man and terrified girl began the long wait for her mother to arrive. The man was restless and paced back and forth through the house. Every few minutes, she would hear him return to the doorway and check on her as she laid on the bed. Eventually, he turned on the television either to help pass time or to prevent Pamela from making any sound that might alert her mother before she entered the house. Frozen in fear, she marked the passing of every half hour as she heard familiar television shows come on the air. She heard the man pull up the desk chair from her room into the doorway and sit down to await the arrival of her mother. But only after a few moments, he became restless and again began to pace through the other rooms of the home. Pamela lay there for the next hour, while the man paced the house and prepared to confront her mother. She held on to the desperate hope that if she and her mother did everything he said, the man would take their money and go away. As 5 p.m. approached, the man returned to Pamela's doorway and took his position in the doorway. In terror, Pamela heard the familiar sound of her mother entering the house and placing a bag of groceries on the kitchen counter. After putting the groceries down, Kathy called out for Pamela, who was always in her room watching television when she came home. But this time, Pamela did not and could not answer. She heard her mother's footsteps as she walked through the house and towards her daughter's room. As soon as she heard sounds of Kathy's arrival, the masked man had stepped back into the shadows of Pamela's room near the closet. The frightened girl heard her mother walk to the doorway of her room and react with surprise of seeing someone lying under the covers on the bed with tape on her eyes and mouth. At this moment, the man apparently stepped forward. To Pamela, it seemed at first as if her mother had reacted in the same way that she had and was only aggravated to find someone in her house playing a cruel prank. It's so normal for humans to feel secure within the comfort of their own homes that the mind is often slow to react to real danger. However, Kathy would realize within seconds that the masked man in her daughter's room wasn't someone playing a prank. As she lay bound on the bed, she heard what sounded like a struggle, and then it sounded as if the man struck her mother with the gun. Once he approved just how serious his intentions were, he began to question Kathy as he had her daughter. He asked her where her money was, but she told him that she only had a little money in her purse. Perhaps hoping for a chance to escape, the woman urged him to let her return to the office where she had told him there was more money. The masked man refused, and Pamela heard him shove her mother into her own bedroom and shut the door. For the next 3 hours, Pamela laid on her bed trying to make sense of what was happening around her by listening to sounds from her mother's room. She heard the sounds of a struggle between her mother and the masked man, and the muffled sound of voices followed by silence. After a while, Pamela heard a sound which will always bring terror to her mind. She heard the sound of tape ripping in the bedroom and assumed that the man was binding her mother in the same way that he had bound her. Eventually, she heard the man leave her mother's room and rummage around in the hall closet as if he was searching for something. Then he returned to her bedroom, and she heard the click of a light switch being turned on. This made her realize that darkness was falling. She heard the man walk towards her dresser, pick up something, and take it to her mother's room. At the time, the confused girl didn't know what the man took from her dresser. Police would later learn that it was some type of powder. For the next 2 hours, Pamela heard the man pace restlessly around the house and assumed that he was waiting for darkness to cover his escape. Several times, she heard him open the screen door as if he was checking on the whereabouts of the dog Thunder. However, each time, she would hear the screen door followed by the sound of footsteps as he again paced through the house.
Hey everyone, I'm Alex, and I'm from APAW Unsolved in West Virginia. I'm a missing persons advocate with a background in criminal justice and psychology, and this channel was created to bring attention to the missing and murdered cases that deserve to be remembered. Here we talk about real people, real families, real stories that still need answers. I spend time researching these cases, speaking with families, and sharing the stories of victims from West Virginia and surrounding areas in hopes of bringing more awareness to cases that are often forgotten. Some of these families have spent years searching for answers. Some are still waiting for someone to come forward. And sometimes all it takes is one person hearing a story to make a difference. If you care about true crime, advocacy, and helping keep these cases in the public eye, make sure to subscribe to APOL Unsolved in West Virginia on YouTube and follow me on Facebook. Together, we can help make sure these stories are never forgotten.
Finally, around 8 p.m., she heard the door slam and could not hear any more footsteps inside the house. It was hot under the blankets, and eventually her sweat began to loosen the tape which bound her, but she still wasn't sure that the man was gone. For a few minutes, she lay quietly and listened for any sound of the man in the house. She had been able to work the sock from her mouth enough to speak. Finally, she got up enough courage to sit up in the bed and call for her mother. But there was no answer from Kathy's room. Pamela was terrified when her mother did not answer, but she hoped that desperately her mother was safe, but bound and gagged like she had been. She pulled the tape from her hands and feet and ran towards her mother's room calling for her. The bedroom was in darkness, and the girl could barely make out her mother's body lying on the bed. Confused because her mother would not answer, and terrified that the man still might be in the house, Pamela panicked and ran towards the bathroom because it was the only room in the house with a lock. She locked herself inside the bathroom and began to try to force the screen from the window and make her escape. After cutting the screen, Pamela forced herself through the small window and ran into the darkness outside. The first thing she saw as she climbed from the window was Thunder, who had came around the house to investigate the sounds at the bathroom window. Thunder followed her to the gate as Pamela ran for help from the house next door. It was like a familiar scene from a horror movie, as the terrified girl pounded on the neighbor's door, only to find out that no one was home. At that point, she believed that her mother was bound and gagged inside the house, and that the madman still might be there. She ran to the neighbor's house across the street and told them the horror which happened to her and her mom. The neighbors immediately called the police. Although the police responded quickly, they were unable to enter the house immediately. Thunder reacted viciously to the attempts by police to enter the yard. In desperation, they even sprayed mace at the dog, but he still would not allow anyone to enter the yard without attacking. So aggressively did the dog defend his territory that the police had to get Pamela to borrow a leash from a neighbor and subdue him. As soon as the dog was tied so that officers could enter the house, a neighbor was allowed to take the trembling girl to Montgomery Hospital for treatment. Her shock and pain would grow over the next hours, for by the time she escaped the house, it was already too late for police to save her mother or capture the attacker. Investigators could do little more than try to piece together the evidence left behind by the cold-blooded murderer on a rampage. Kathy Carroll's body was found in her bedroom, where she had been tied and then strangled with an extension cord. Evidence led investigators to believe that she had also been raped. It appeared that after she was dead, the murderer had put powder over her eyelids and her body. It was the powder that had been taken from Pamela's dresser. There were several facets of the time which confused investigators. The most baffling was, how did the assailant gain access to the home without being attacked by the family dog? The animal was so vicious that after he was tied, the state police were forced to call professional handlers to remove the dog from the scene. Yet the murderer had been able to enter the house and hide to await the arrival of Pamela and later Kathy. The man had portrayed himself to Pamela as a burglar, but it seemed very unlikely that out of all of the homes in the neighborhood, a burglar would have deliberately selected this modest home, which was protected by a large and obviously vicious dog. No one would ever learn how the man managed to enter or leave the house without being attacked by Thunder. If an entire force of police with mace could not back the dog down, one man would definitely have been unable to. Burglars customarily preferred to strike while a house is empty. They try to break in, take what they can find, and then leave as quickly as they can without being seen. Ordinarily, burglars do not arrive wearing masks to hide their identity and be equipped with heavy tape to bind their victims. The attacker had seemed to be more familiar with the house, knowing which room was Pamela's and which room belonged to her mother. It appeared that he was also familiar with their daily routines. Only someone who knew that no one came to the house without calling first would have felt safe to remain at a murder scene for 5 hours before making his escape. The case became more baffling for police and more frightening for residents of the area as months passed. Police kept information about the crime under tight security, fearing to let the guilty man know what evidence they had against him. But rumors began to circulate and terror continued to spread until officials were forced to release information to curb the panic. A hospital worker released the information that Kathy Carroll's body had been found with white powder on her eyelids. This rumor grew more until the police was coming to believe that the white powder had been poured down her throat. Sheriff's Corporal Pete Lopez, who was investigating the case, was eventually forced to confirm the hospital worker's statement to quiet the fears of friends and neighbors of Kathy's. The time of her death was established to have been between 6 and 8 p.m., which meant that Pamela and her mother had been trapped in the house with the rapist and murderer for as long as 3 hours before Pamela's escape brought police to the scene. One of the most challenging aspects of the investigation for police officials was separating facts related to the murders from rumors, and rumors began to fly. Early in May, the information came out that allegations of misappropriation of funds in the Montgomery Police Department had prompted Mayor James Higgins to question an investigation from the state police around April 10, 1986, 2 weeks before Kathy Carroll's murder. Could her job as financial director for the city of Montgomery have been the tie to the murder?
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
Rumors maintain that it was. According to a department memo, the investigation was the result of charges of cover-up, rumors, and innuendos in the police department. But it proved to be a false lead when the state police investigation uncovered no evidence of wrongdoing or missing funds. As soon as one aspect of the case was laid to rest, another sprang up. At 10:30 on May 4th, shots were fired at a truck belonging to Kathy's estranged husband, Gene Carroll. He reported to the Smithers Detachment of the Fayette County Sheriff's Department that a dark-colored, four-door sedan was seen moving away from his pickup truck after shots were fired. Two shots had been leveled at his truck, one hitting the left cab window and the other puncturing the left front tire. Police believe that this shooting attempt against him only 2 weeks after his wife's death was surely connected to the murder. Investigations into the shooting led officers to believe that it had been connected, but not in the way they had first suspected. For the man arrested for the shooting was Marshall Drennan, Kathy's first husband and the father to their daughter Pamela. From the beginning, police seemed confident of making a quick arrest. Early reports estimated the time until an arrest at 30 days in December of 1986. 8 months after his daughter's death, Kathy's father, Edward Roberts, offered a $1,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of her killer. but the reward remains unclaimed, and the murderer continues to remain large. Years after the murder, no charges were filed. Those years were filled with confusion and fear for Pamela. Time and time again, she had told her painful story to investigators, but could provide no information that could point a finger of guilt at the man who murdered her mother. For a year after the murder, she could not sleep at all without waking up with nightmares. If such a horror was waiting for her within the boundaries of her own home, where could she feel safe? In truth, the death of Kathy Carroll involves more than just the loss of a young woman and mother. For as long as the cold-blooded murderer who committed this crime remained at large, not only Pamela should feel unsafe, if violent death could strike the Carroll home without warning on that ordinary April day, it could strike any home anywhere. This is a reality in which Pamela must live with every day of her life. In fact, whether we want to admit it or not, the case remained cold. That is, until 2 decades after the murder, it appeared that justice would finally be brought to the murderer.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe
and watch for deer.
In 2006, a cold case unit led by Sheriff William Laird had gathered enough evidence to make an arrest. The estranged husband, Gene Carroll, was arrested and charged with murder. In time, he was accused of hiring another man, former boxing promoter Eddie Queen, and paying him $5,000 to kill Kathy. It was alleged that Carroll and Queen worked together to devise a plan that would enable Carroll to be present to provide Queen access to the house so he could get past Thunder. At that point, the state alleged that Queen waited enough time to allow Carroll to create an alibi before committing the murder. The trial of Gene Carroll was first on the docket. Pamela had fought for 20 years to ensure that law enforcement officials did not forget her mother's case. She finally hoped to see justice brought to her. Initially, the trial seemed to be going well for prosecution. Evidence and witness testimony painted a convincing portrait of Carroll's guilt. Witnesses placed him near the Carroll's home shortly before the murder in the time to escort the murderer past Thunder. Testimony was given that Carroll had offered other men $5,000 to murder Kathy on at least 2 occasions. Family members testified that Carroll had often stated that Kathy would not live to see the divorce become final. Unfortunately, midway through the trial, Judge John Hatcher had to declare a mistrial because he learned that witnesses had been talking to each other about the case before testimony. The prosecution was forced to start from scratch 6 months later, but now they were faced with an additional challenge. Before the mistrial, the defense had seen their case and had an additional 6 months to prepare to discredit it. The disadvantage proved to be too much time to overcome, and the jury acquitted Gene Carroll of hiring his wife's murderer. Within days, the prosecution was forced to drop the charges against Edward Queen also. With Carroll acquitted of hiring Queen to commit the murder, the state had lost the backbone of its case. Once again, the murder of Kathy Carroll was returned to the status of unsolved murders. We'll be taking next week off, but we'll be back the following week with a new episode. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find a good West Virginia true crime podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. All at Mountain State Mysteries. Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com. For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.
Hey y'all, I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.